right, guys, welcome to the, let's see, what is this? Episode 3, right? Mm-hmm. Episode 3 of the Flight Test After Hours podcast.
Yeah.
We got a little short crew here.
Short staffed.
Yeah, short staffed. I got Alex Savada here, and I got a special guest with me. I have the original Angry Swordsman here, Eric Monroe.
What's up, everybody?
How you doing, Eric?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on.
Good to see you. Now, I have to say, Alex, you know, we actually had a previous podcast recorded, and it was really good.
Yeah, there's actually a reason we're short-staffed, and it's because we are pressing on time. It's actually Thursday, right?
Yes, Thursday.
Thursday. And this is going out Monday, so... we had an awesome podcast recorded. It was almost 2 hours long.
Let's save it because we're going to do it again.
Yeah.
But it was pretty special.
Yeah. So basically, we went to transfer the card, plugged it into the computer, located the file, listened to it. We listened to the beginning and the end. We're like, yep, that's the file. Started transferring it. Error message popped up and it said, this card is corrupt, cannot read or write any data. And we tried multiple sources to try to recover anything we could, and it's just completely...
We lost it.
And of course, that has to happen when you have a gem.
I know the tech guy, he worked on it for 2-3 days trying to recover it, and they couldn't get it.
Yeah. So. Just to give you a little teaser, I got to give him a little bit of a nugget.
Go ahead.
We're going to be re-recording it, but it's a podcast dealing with full-scale flight. Full-scale flight versus RC flight regulations of, what full-scale pilots think of the hobby and how they can relate their skills and pretty much all that stuff. And it was a lot of really, really good content. So look forward to that.
We're going
to
do it again for sure. All right. Hey, guys. Man, I've been getting a ton of email, a lot of questions on Twitter. So I really appreciate that. Just so you know, we're working on things. I actually set up on Ustream for possibly doing a live stream, so that's all set up and ready to go. I think we're going to try that very soon. Also, we'd really like to get into taking some live calls, so I set up on blogtalkradio.com. So I think down the road we're going to get on there and take some live phone calls and get a couple more people in the studio, so I think that's going to work out really good. I've been trying to answer most of the questions and comments on, through email on Twitter, and I think I'm doing okay, but there's a few on here I thought I'd just bring up to everybody, and we can talk a little bit about it. Real quick, hey guys, thanks for, do you remember, Alex, we were talking about the micro FPV quads, flying in the house. And
That was in podcast 2, right?
Yeah, I think so. And I've got a ton of emails about, there's a couple of them out already, by Wakira and one by, Hubson, I think.
And ReadyMade RC sells a micro FPV setup, so you can put it on anything you want, put it on like MQX or...
Right.
Oh, I want one. I have two of those Hubsan X4s.
Do you?
Yeah, they're pretty sweet. I like them.
So maybe
FPV
we can get,
would be
yeah,
great.
Maybe we can get one of those in or something and do a little testing on it.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
So I appreciate that. Let's see. What else we got? Okay, here's one I'm going to throw out to everybody. I got a question from Jimmy Cobbler, and what he wanted to know is, what's your honest opinion of Hobby King? All right.
Wow.
Here's my opinion. I'm going to tell you what I think, and I'm a straight up.
So we're allowed to speak freely here, right?
Yeah, I don't have a problem. Yeah. Now, I think personally, in the last couple years, really, I think Hobby King has gotten a lot better.
Mm-hmm.
Now, earlier in my career of RC flying, I can say that they kept me in it. Like, if I got a plane and something happened, or I burnt something up, or I crashed it, I could go to Hobby King and buy a cheaper motor or a cheaper ESC or buy parts or whatever. So it really helped me to stay in it. And the last couple years, I think, you know, they've got a lot of things that have come down that are better, like the DuraFly line. Mm-hmm. And I know you, Eric, you flew some of the stuff.
Sure, yeah, when we were still sponsored by them, we did quite a bit with those.
And it's, you know, it's pretty good stuff. But I think it's like any hobby manufacturer, even Horizon Hobby, they bring out some stuff that literally I've flown or seen, and I'm like, mm-hmm. it's not that good. Mm-hmm. So every manufacturer has their good points and their bad points. Yeah. So I think personally, for me, Hobby King's the same way. They got some really good stuff, mm-hmm. and they got some really bad stuff. You know, you just kind of got to pick and choose, you know, and depending on what you're looking for. I mean, that's my opinion. Yeah. What do you think?
I really, really wish that I could say that I'd never had a bad experience with Hobby King. but I have, and it's just like shipping stuff, or sometimes they'll customer service. You know,
I agree.
Something happened with your order, and then you try to call them or email them, or they have the live chat thing, which isn't working yet. But on the other hand, I can honestly say that it's a risk that I'm willing to take.
Right.
I think it's worth the risk of having a mess up order. And I've never had an issue that never got fixed. I've had issues that take a long time to get fixed, but they always end up taking care of it, and the package eventually shows up.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah.
And really, back in the day, they're cheap LiPo batteries back in the day. I mean, that kept me in the game, too.
That's my only experience with Hobby King. Like, honestly, like, I was really, what's the word I'm looking for? I was real hesitant to order from them at first. Even when we were still sponsored, you know, when we had the sponsorship through the show, and, you know, Josh and them are ordering, and Chad's ordering, and they're getting their stuff, and I'm watching them have success. But I'd go on the forums and see the opposite. And so, mm-hmm. like, I had a real hesitation trying to order with them at first. And I have placed an order with them and got over that fear. And it was great. Like, I ordered from the U.S. warehouse and kind of took a baby step into it.
And there is tremendous value in the they have really good quality products.
Sure.
Actually, in the shop over there right now, we have a DuraFly T28, and it's right next to a Parkzone T28.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
And when you compare the price, first off, the Hobby King one is cheaper, but then you also factor in the stuff like it has retracts.
Right.
It has nav lights.
Yep. Yeah.
It's more scale. Now, I haven't flown the Hobby King one.
And I did. I was just about to comment on that. When we did the episode on that one, I believe we did an episode on that one. Yeah, it's been a few years ago. We got to fly it that day afterwards, and we're playing around a little bit with it. And I have a Parkzone T28 myself.
Oh, yeah.
And so I got to say the Hobby King one, it's light years ahead of the Horizon one. Yeah. And the Horizon one's great. It flies nice. It floats in for a landing real good. We actually put flaps on the Horizon one.
Yeah, me too.
Kind of modded it a little bit. But the T28 from Hobby King was... retracts
and that's the DuraFly line, and that's Stuart, that's the guy you see on the Hobby King live videos. And I've actually met Stuart and Toby and a lot of the key players over there at Hobby King, and I got to take my hat off to the guys, because they are genuine guys, and they are genuinely interested in improving and growing the hobby. You got to take into consideration, like, Horizons has a really good reputation,
right?
But Horizon, as far as I know, is only in the States. Hobby King is on a worldwide level, dealing with multiple warehouses, the tons more of logistics, tons more products.
Sure.
The Hobby King site, the website, it still seems kind of overwhelming, but it is light years ahead of where it was about this time last year. And if you think about every single product that they sell, I would love to know the number of how many items they sell, because it has to be thousands. It has to be maybe even tens of thousands. Like, the site just keeps going, and you get into a crevice of the site that you've never, like, oh, they sell these things? Like, you can build a robot? Or like, what?
Yeah. Now, I do know Horizon Hobby is all over the world.
They are.
And I know this for a fact, because a lot of times what I used to do is, I guess because of the time change and the time zones, their product videos would sometimes hit Australia first, and they would see the new product first before we would get it here. So the guys in Australia would link the video and put it on RC groups like 8 hours before it would hit in the States. So
now do they have warehouses throughout the world, or are they shipping all from the United States?
No, I think they got warehouses all over Europe too. Okay. Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Not positive on that.
And again, with the stuff I was was talking about. I'm not positive. I'm just going based off what I think.
And I'm sure you guys probably know that Hobby King's, I think, fairly close to opening up the East Coast warehouse now. Did you know that?
The second U.S. warehouse.
Yes, yes. The second. I said East Coast.
The first one's in Washington, isn't
correct.
It?
Correct.
Yeah. As well as, I believe it's a customer support office, too, in New York.
Oh, okay.
And it's right on a full-scale runway there. And they're going to be – it's customer service office as well as it's a studio. So they're going to do shoots there and stuff.
I think they got footage on their website of it, too.
So, yeah, they do. Yeah, there's videos. Hobby King Live is – I love their videos. Yeah. It's really good stuff. Lots of good – they're getting their ducks in a row. And it's you got to keep in mind it's a young company that is absolutely huge. They haven't been around for a very long time. And they're still sorting things out and improving things. You got to keep that. And then the other thing to keep in mind, too, is their headquarters is in Hong Kong, especially for those of you out there who are in the States. So when you're on customer support, well, why don't they answer my call? It's because they're asleep.
Yeah.
You got to keep that in mind. They're a day behind or 12 hours behind us.
Right. And my theory, too, is, you know, with any company, you got to use your head a little bit and realize sometimes you get what you pay for. If you're going to spend $6 on a 20-amp ESC compared to $25 or $30, the cheaper one's probably not going to be as good, you know. So you just got to, you know, look and see what you want, see the prices, and you know, you get what you pay for kind of deal.
Speaking to the quality of the stuff you mentioned earlier, I mean, I've been flying their nanotech batteries in my big hexacopter all year, and they're still flying like they're brand new. So, the products they're putting out are really good. And again, the T-28, I mean, that thing flew better. It flew circles around the Park Zone or the Horizon one.
Right.
You know, so a lot of, even their little DT-750 motors, like I think my favorite motor from them. And they're like, what, $7 or $8?
Yeah.
Now, that's the negative is those things are never in stock. Like, you wait months and months.
Same with, like, the KK2 board.
If you can get them, you got to order, like, 20 of them.
Yeah, the 2.1 board's a little bit more readily available. Yeah.
But don't they still limit you on buying them?
I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah. I think the last time I looked, you're only like allowed two, maybe.
Yeah. I think when I bought my KK2 boards, you could only buy three.
Yeah.
So,
all right. Enough of that. On to the next one. Josh Woodruff wants to know, is there any bit, let's see, how many, I'm sorry, take that back. Have you spent tons of time on a build only to have it end in an epic fail?
Yeah.
I don't think you're modeling if you don't have epic fails in your builds.
I'm trying to think if I've really had an epic fail, though. I don't really think I have anything.
I'm trying to think if I've ever had success.
How about I'm trying to think even in the flight test episodes if we've really built something that had a complete epic fail. Not that I can think of.
I remember one, and I don't remember if it ever got revisited, was Rocket Plane, I think, was a pretty epic fail the first time or two.
Yeah, you're right.
Now, did they come back around and fix that?
With, like, a Striker, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know if I was available for that shoot that day, but I know the first one was...
Was that the one that ended up in the tree, like, all the way across? Yeah, you're right.
Well, they got the second one. It wasn't a Striker, but it was, like, a Striker-esque kind of airframe they put a rocket on, and they got it working, and they had one successful flight, and they glided it back down, and then David went downstairs and got this massive rocket, and they put it on there, and it just shredded the airframe to bits.
Actually, that's the one that's in the pro or the intro to the flight test show right now, isn't it? Yeah. Okay. So they did have success with that.
Yeah. But the first
I think
one,
the first one was an epic
I do
fail.
Remember that. Which, I think we tried it twice, right?
With the Frankenplane towing up the wasn't it a composite jet that the rocket was in?
Oh, yeah. It was a yellow one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they put it on top of that.
The cradle on the top of it.
And it just didn't work because there wasn't enough airspeed.
Right.
They ended up getting back to it. Actually, the episode, when that fail happened, they came up with an idea because they still needed to release an episode, and it was the glider tow, right?
I think. I don't know if I was there for that one then the next time, but
I'm pretty sure it was.
The only really epic fail I could think of, and I've already told this story, was when I was learning to fly, I got my first P-51 Mustang, and it lasted about 30 seconds and I augured it into the pavement in 1,000 pieces.
Yeah. But
I haven't really built anything that really didn't just, you know.
Yeah. I was actually talking to Eric about this just a little bit ago, but I didn't build my first multi-rotor until I started working at Flight Test. And the first one I made, it was when Chad was prototyping for the Anycopter, so I made an Anycopter quad. And just, I don't know what it was, but the thing just never flew right. And even once David and Chad tried to set it up, it still would be squirrely, or I don't know if my ESCs are bad, but stuff would cut out and it would flip and it was glitchy and twitchy. And that ended up, I think I was flying it at my dad's club. It's called the Doylestown Barnstormers, and I was flying. There was, you know, these huge gassers and 3D planes, and got all these guys flying these gas stuff, and I was putzing around this little wooden quad, just like super slow. I was getting the hang of it, and it still didn't fly great, but I was learning how to fly pattern, and I started bringing it around. It started coming right at us. And I lost orientation. So it's just coming right at us. And I just cut it. And it just landed right at our feet in a million pieces. And everyone's like, what? Why'd you do that? Like, you were flying fine. And then you just cut the power and it just fell like a rock. So
you don't want to admit to the orientation thing. I don't know what happened to it.
Yeah. I don't know.
Lost signal, something happened to it. All right, let's see. We got another one. Adam Drain wanted to know. He wanted a couple tips, like for flying indoors at events, like what to bring to fly or what to do or anything like that.
Don't fly planes that you care about.
I was just going to say, the first thing is take something that you don't care if it's going to get demolished or
it's a controlled chaos.
Yeah, exactly.
At best.
Right, right. So I'd say that's the most important thing, really.
Don't waste your time with the ultra micro anything. Actually, we've told the story a couple times, but me and Josh met at an indoor event. He crashed right through my UMX Beast, and at that time, it was my only plane. It was like my baby.
Right.
And I was just like, and it's, you know, nothing crazy, but still a $120 plane at the time.
So what did he hit you with? Probably like a massive Dollar Tree foam board?
It was a nutball that was literally about... It was literally 3 feet wide.
And it cost like $4 to rebuild, right?
Yeah. It didn't even do any damage. It literally just plowed right through the beast.
And as a matter of fact, that's hanging on the wall out here, right?
Yeah. Which, I mean, flying those ultra micro planes indoors is so nice because they do fly good, especially when there's no wind.
Yes.
It's beautiful. We just did a review on the new AS3X Spitfire, AS3X P51, and then the...
P40?
No. We didn't. That one doesn't have AS3X, so we didn't get it.
Oh.
But the Fly Zone P38.
Oh, okay.
The ultra micro one.
Yeah.
And they're so fun. It's like flying a big plane, especially with the AS3X.
Right.
Handles so well, but not with other planes. Don't go to an event with one of those things.
Planes are magnets for like foam board airplanes in those events.
Yeah, well, we went to JR, and that was right when the old Fogey and the old Speedster were added to our store, and which they're great indoor planes, but they're pretty big compared to most indoor planes.
Right.
I forget, maybe 30-something wingspan, 38 inches or 35. But we were just chewing other people's planes up. And, we felt terrible. But, you know, it's like if you fly, you die.
And a lot of times they would just run into us and be like, boom, and they would just chew them up, spin them up. We just keep on going. They wouldn't even flinch.
Chad absolutely demolished what are those things called? Champ.
Oh, yeah.
A little tiny champ, which those things don't weigh anything.
Right.
They're super small and lightweight. And it's like the old Speedster didn't even notice it. It just is like, bam, and it just like went right through the prop, and it was just like confetti. It was just like yellow confetti. Chad didn't even hit the ground. He just kept flying.
Yeah, it doesn't even phase it.
We do a lot of indoor flying at the church where I used to actually work there full time.
Uh-huh.
And back when Josh's dad was still alive, he would bring one of those blue like foam.
Oh, yeah.
That you get from like the Z Fold insulation stuff, and he built this plane, and it was, you know, we're all flying ultra micros, the Citabria and the Cessna.
Oh,
and this
was
right in the beginning when days of ultra micro.
I remember those.
And the same thing happened. This one guy named Kevin was flying, and Bruce come around a corner with this. I mean, it's like three times the size. It's got an 8 or a 10 inch prop, and it just shredded it. Like it just confetti just comes, and it didn't even phase his airplane. So it seems like indoor flying, like you're 100% right. You take something that's nice, and it's just just bound for disaster.
Yeah, and for the for those of you out there who have never gone to an event before, there is a little bit of an intimidation factor when you see like 20 planes in the air. Bring something that's easy to fly,
right?
At least for at first, because even if it's a like the JR Fest or I think the Horizon Indoor event, it's a really cool atmosphere in the sense that there's not really stations. Everybody, you can just walk up to the line, throw your plane.
Nobody's gonna yell at you.
But like Neat Fair and some other events that I've been to, it's like stations. So like you wait in line and then you're at your station. You have to go up. You have a spotter. Everyone on the flight line is just kind of watching the people that are flying. So you know when somebody goes to take off, inevitably everyone's watching you. So bring something that you can start out with that you know you'll be comfortable with, rather than like some kind of crazy striker or something like
right.
that.
Right. Speaking of that, the first year they had to fly it up in Geneva. We were up there the whole flight. We shot some episodes up there. It was the one where we shot the little GB. I think it was the
GBR3.
Yeah, up there. And some guy had a micro wing up there that was souped up, and he got that thing going in there, I bet 60, 70 miles. This thing's just cranking. Pretty soon you're just seeing foam going everywhere. He was just clipping people left and right. There was like these kids are just like, where did my plane just go? It just disappeared.
First year at JR, I think, was just like that. My first year ever at an indoor event, it was the same thing. I think there was more crashes and more foam getting chewed up during like open flying.
Right.
And then they had this like big combat thing where you're supposed to hit everyone.
Yeah.
And there was like 2 or 3 minutes, nobody's hitting anybody.
Yeah.
But when there's open flying, foam is just going everywhere.
That's the way it goes.
So, yeah.
That's funny. Let's see what else we got. I had a couple... people on Twitter saying that we ought to throw some more stuff on the Gremlin channel. I don't know if you guys been thinking about that. Some behind
actually,
the scenes
stuff. I believe we just posted a video a couple days ago. Some behind the scenes stuff from the Vigan episode.
Yeah. Ooh, that ought to be good.
Yeah, it was David and Chad testing the afterburner.
Oh, okay.
So it's new stuff, and we would love to be able to post on that every day. And we're actually working on some really cool, innovative ways to bring you guys more content, because we know that there's an endless need for more content. And we're doing our best to make that a reality. But it's just, there's not enough time in the day for everyone right now. But, you know, it's not to say, especially with like events coming up and the weather changing, we'll definitely get some good posts, like RJ Gritters. I don't know if either of you guys ever saw the variable pitch thrust vectoring 3D plane video that I took at Horizon Indoor event.
Yeah.
It's just little tidbits, little nuggets of something interesting to look at. Or even like the Alex Cam. I'll try to do another one of those.
Speaking of Alex Cam, I had an idea, and I think this would be hilarious. Because I watched the Alex Cam and I liked it and everything, but I thought we should do a David Cam. And it should be like, do you remember EdTV, the movie, where they follow him around with a camera and mm-hmm. he becomes a big... If you follow David around all day, something is going to happen. Whether he cuts the end of his finger off or he passes out or, you know, something of that sort. You know, I think it'd be hilarious when he cut the end of – what did he do? Cut the end of his finger off when he was doing something on the 3D printer.
Yeah. Didn't he, like, pass out?
Yeah.
He was the only one here?
Nobody was here, and he passes out on the floor. You know, I think that'd be great. You're just sitting there with a camera on him the whole time. Well, okay, I'll give him 5 minutes. If he isn't up in 5 minutes, then I'll call an ambulance.
Yeah, a webcam of the shop.
Yeah.
What is he working on? Oh.
Where did he go?
He fell over.
Yeah.
He's not getting up.
Right. I think that would be hilarious to follow him around all
well,
day.
Well, yeah. And as all of you know, we touched a little bit on it in the most recent viewer response. David's going back to his homeland of Sweden. I believe it's end of April.
Right.
But we have some really good, innovative ideas and plans to continue to keep him in the flight test family. I can't touch on it too much, but we have some really, really cool stuff coming your way.
So, can't wait.
So keep an eye out for that.
All right. One last thing here, and we'll move on. I have an email from a gentleman, and this is actually going out, I guess, to everybody, but mostly Josh Bixler and David, because this could be a pretty cool challenge. And this was from Malcolm Walker, and he said, hi, guys. I wanted to get in touch with the flight test crew to outline a safety innovation idea I have for multi-rotors. I'm a military pilot instructor and have been an avid AC and RC enthusiast and operator for a few years. I've gotten into multis this year, although I hate and do not fly them in public areas for safety reasons. I had a couple ideas. He says helicopters travel over water are required to have floats installed or emergency inflatable floats. What if the same concept was used for Maltese, a small inflatable device that inflated if there was a sudden problem or uncommanded descent, engine failure or something of that nature, could be triggered by the operator. This would be a cushion. This would cushion the fall and not only save the Maltese, but increase the impact it could have on people. Also, what do you guys think? What do you think?
So basically, to restate the question, an emergency system for quads that fly over water.
I wouldn't say so much water. I think he was talking about in the military they have that. Okay. But I think what he's talking about, and I know you, Eric, fly a lot of multi-rotors.
Yeah, there's a couple of things I can say to that. I read an article some years ago. Some people in Germany were actually designing a parachute system that almost like a ballistic chute on an ultralight,
right? Mm-hmm.
So that if something happens, they could. But the problems they were running into, and again, this was 2 or 3 years ago, was weight and right. just the clunkiness of it being on top. So I don't know. I kind of stopped following
No,
it.
I've had people phone in and email me with questions about the parachute system.
Right.
And there is a company. It's overseas. And I'm sorry.
I know what you're talking about.
And it's pricey. It's like a couple $100, but it's made for high-end multi-rotor. And I believe it's a ballistic parachute.
Yep, you're right.
And I believe additional programming goes into the flight controller or something, because the parachute ejects out the bottom, the downwash from the props blast it down, and then the multi-rotor tips over, and then it comes down upside down, and it saves everything.
So it seems that technology was pressed forward.
Yeah, and this guy's kind of on the same technology. He was looking into, and I think he's trying some stuff.
Is he saying like an airbag or?
Yeah, kind of maybe like an airbag. He was talking about you trying to involve like the CO2 cartridges you use for like bicycle tires, something of that nature, and, you know, and then all of a sudden the thing fills up enough to where if it hits somebody or even hits a ground, that it's, you know, not going to do that
like
much
the
damage.
Avalanche prevention system that James Bond uses in Tomorrow Never Dies. It's that big inflatable golf ball.
right. Yeah. But he could be onto something. You know,
sure.
That could be cool. And the whole idea with the floats on the water. Sorry, this is a little bit different subject, but there is a company, I believe it's called Aquacopters, but they make a quadcopter. I give a shout out to one of our flight test communities, Jake Wells. He does the Boxcopter and awesome designs. And this Aquacopters company is kind of the same, except instead of a box, they have a plastic molded body. The only thing that's on the outside of this casing are the motors. Everything else is inside. And they have some really cool videos on YouTube, I think is where I came across them. And it's just kind of looks like a DJI Phantom body, but it's completely watertight.
I think I've seen that.
And they'll just literally take it 100 feet up above the water and just let it fall into the water. And it hits, smacks the water, goes underwater, comes back up, and then just takes back off again. So definitely check that out, too.
I was flying down in Florida one time, and so this is a share. Nobody actually even knows about this.
Ooh.
I had one of my first quadcopters that I had a GoPro on. I was flying over water, and I was flying out over a golf course, and I was filming some stuff there. And one of the cells on my super expensive, like, Thunder Power batteries dropped and sent my, and I wasn't flying parallel at the time. Uh-huh. And so that was a hard lesson learned. Well, I had pool noodles on my copter. And I used those for orientation back then.
I remember that.
And it kept my quad floating, and I was able to get it back. And I didn't have to replace anything on it except for the ESCs.
No kidding.
And obviously the bad battery.
Yeah.
But in fresh water, your motors, you dry them out, you're fine. My KK board was fine. Mm-hmm. Like everything, I put it on rice. And
Yeah.
And it was great. So like having a flotation device on there definitely has, you know, it's worth.
Yeah.
It's worth
so
into,
was that
sure.
the Angry Bird quadcopter?
Yeah. Well, it was the one actually before that.
Oh, before
the
that.
Angry Bird one was a 6-cell, and this was my 3-cell copter before I made it bigger.
Oh, gotcha.
So it was one of my first ones, and it the only reason I have it was because of those flotation device. So I think what he says is
And didn't you originally start putting them on for vibration and stuff?
Well,
right?
For orientation mostly. Okay. The vibration was a whole different thing.
Oh, but gotcha.
Yeah, I needed a landing gear, and so they made a nice landing gear.
That's a pretty cool idea.
When you'd come in FPV, it put the footprint so wide that you could never flip over.
Right.
So, and they float.
That's cool. Awesome. All right, we'll get off that subject for a little while. I'll tell you what. Let's talk about you, Eric, for a little bit.
Oh, no. Yeah.
Now, you are the original angry swordsman that really stirred the pot there for that episode.
Which, by the way, he's more than qualified. Extremely highly trained. You
right.
are a... What are you trained in?
It's called Wing Chun Kung Fu. It's a soft style Chinese art. So I've got about 20 some years at that.
Yeah. So he wasn't just out there throwing.
It wasn't
around.
Just some no, random guy with yeah. a sword.
But it was weird because that day when I got there, I had no idea that we were going to do anything about that. Chad's like, "Do you think you can hit an airplane with a sword?"
And I'm
like,
"Yeah.
Why?" So it was a shock, obviously, that we were going to do that. But you know, I just said, "Well, I'll try." You know, what am I going to protect my eyes with? So he's like digging around the garage and hands me one of Christian's paintball helmets.
I remember that.
Yeah,
that was hilarious.
The rest was history.
Now, for everybody out there, give us a little background. I don't even know how you want to put it. You mostly ran like B-cam and the aerial stuff.
Actually mostly just ground stuff. Like I designed a little shoulder rig that my camera runs on because I have a production company. And so outside of there, I had a shoulder rig that I kind of liked to run it, you know, mm-hmm. just was comfortable and that sort of thing. And then when I started shooting with Flight Test, I had the shotgun cam.
I remember that
thing.
I ran it one day.
Well, because when I designed that, the airplanes are going by right. 60, 70, and sometimes over 100 miles an hour, depending on what we're flying. And so I thought, well, skeet shooters are following
that was a
skeet.
Yeah.
And I'm like, if I put a camera on the end of that thing and have sights, I'll be able to keep my eye on the ball and not have to even worry about what the camera's
right.
doing. And so we like put it in a rifle, like sight rack,
yeah.
and like sighted this thing in at 100 yards. And so that was what we were filming on. And so, yeah, that's kind of how I got started, was just because I was like just intrigued by trying to follow really fast things and not lose
right.
them.
I remember in one of the early intros to the show, there was a quick cut and you could see the rifle. And it was when I first discovered Flight Test. Like, wow, look at this. This is awesome. Like there in the plane, oh, multi-rotor. That guy's a gun.
Yeah. What's he doing with that? He's going to shoot it out of the sky. And I'll give you a lot of credit. I think you're one of the best as far as following planes in the sky.
Yeah, I do. Thank you.
And the reason I say this is I must have been one time you weren't there. They're like, Chris, you're going to run the gun cam. I'm like, oh, okay. And I'm telling you what, after I was done, I was exhausted trying to follow those planes.
Which Eric is definitely in better shape than me. But for those of you who haven't filmed something in the sky for about 20 minutes straight, holding a camera pointed at the sky for that long and following it, and when it flies directly over
exactly,
your head.
Which Josh likes to do.
Yeah, they don't think about the camera guy
right.
ever.
It's
right.
funny you mentioned that, because like earlier when Josh Scott was first learning to fly, like this was like season one.
Uh-huh.
And so when I moved from the shotgun cam to that turret gunner
yeah.
shoulder cam thing that I have, like there were times when it hurt my neck so bad.
Yeah.
I had to literally lay down on the ground.
I remember that,
because Josh was flying three mistakes high and he's above our heads.
Yeah.
And so the only way I could keep him in the shot was to lay down. And so, it was challenging at first. So
yeah, I can
physical.
Relate. I can relate firsthand, and I'm not in the best of shape right now,
and
unfortunately.
I'm trying to count. How many times do you think you've been hit?
Oh, goodness. I think that after season
more than
one,
anybody.
They started trying to
I think
hit
so,
me.
Too. They're like
it became Josh's joke.
Yeah.
I'm going to hit Eric this show.
Yeah.
So, yeah, countless. I've got hit in the knees and the ankles.
Probably more than anybody else in the history of Flight Test.
And I see you got hit here recently, too, didn't you?
In the speed challenge, David, if that would have hit me, I would have died.
Oh, it didn't hit you?
No, this is different. I got hit by the Habu in the indoor episode.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it wasn't too bad. I actually blocked it with my hand, and I'll plug the Flight Test Vine account, which I run. There's the video on there, and if it's a couple of posts back now, but it's a great 6-second Vine of this thing. I think he does one cut or one take, and he goes by, and then I cut, and then it comes back, and you just hear this thing. And you just hear poof, and I blocked it with my hand, which was holding my phone, so it like amplified the sound.
It looked gnarly.
It sounds like it like went directly into my eye socket. It's this terrible sound.
It does.
It's pretty funny.
Funny.
Going back to the B-cam thing though, it's actually kind of funny. Dave Knopp showed me some of my B-cam stuff I was watching, and I'm filming the plane, and it's way up there and going right over my head, and you can hear me, like, kind of just, like, groaning. I'm just like... like stretch in because I'm leaned all the way over back. Sounds like a zombie or like I'm dying or something, but really I'm just trying to like hold the camera.
It's a struggle, especially the high shots overhead, and then you've got to zoom in really far,
yes.
and that really becomes difficult. I don't know how many, you know, mm-hmm. you zoom in on a camera and then it becomes mm-hmm. way more sensitive.
Well, so yeah, and you have to have one hand on the lens to focus
to
and
focus
zoom,
and, yeah.
and then the other hand is holding that whole huge camera rig, which camera rigs, I mean, SLRs aren't light to begin with, but then they put extra weight on the camera rigs to help stabilize so you don't get shaky footage. So it's not terribly heavy, but it starts to weigh on your shoulder after, yeah. you know, 25 right. minute shoot.
So I got to ask you then, you know, after several years of shooting and everything, we had a few episodes in my mind, I know, like, you know how it was. Sometimes we'd show up and we didn't know what was going to happen or what we were going to do or
sure.
something didn't work and, you know, we're changing this and doing that. Was there any episodes that stick in your mind that we did that you were like, this is never going to work, there's no way this is going to happen?
Most of them. Yeah. I had my doubts, honestly, and I was totally wrong. But when I saw the turkey airplane, I thought, sure, there's no way this thing's flying. And like you said, I got there that day and, like, you know, I didn't know what we were even
right.
filming sometimes.
Right, right.
Because, you know, I work during the week with my own business.
Right.
So, like, I'm just showing up on Saturdays to say, hey, here I am, let's do this. And
right.
yeah, I saw that thing sitting there and was like, okay, this one's gonna fly, fall right out of the sky. And here it flew awesome.
Yeah.
So
that was one of the best episodes, I think.
Yeah. Which, funny you bring that up, because we actually still have the original blender from the Will It Blend. It's hanging in the shop here. Eric, any idea why we don't have the turkey plane anymore?
Yeah, I was wondering if you were going to bring that up. Well, and there's another story to that, too. So, yeah, I walked outside. It was pitch black after the episode. We ate dinner after the show.
Yeah. Chad lives pretty far out there.
Yeah, he lives out there, so there's no ambient light anywhere.
I remember this.
And
now.
I literally just put my foot right through the, like, I don't know if it was the tail or the side of the fuselage or what, but I mean, I'm 220 pounds and, like, yeah, I walked right through it. But I, you know, after they made me to feel bad for a few minutes, they let me off the hook that I was the second person that day who had tripped over it and broke it.
Yeah.
So I didn't feel quite as bad then, but
yeah,
I destroyed it.
I was telling Alex here a while back, the episode that just made me so nervous, it scared the daylights out of me, was the one where we did the flying wing through the plate pane of glass.
Yeah.
Remember that one?
I do.
Because I remember we got in there and I said, hey, what's going on? You know, and sometimes Chad, he comes up with these crazy ideas and you're like, really? We're going to try. You want to what?
Well,
are you sure?
You remember the first attempt, it didn't really
right.
work. And so then we got a
drill bit.
Yes.
With the rock.
It was a cement drill.
But I'm thinking, I helped Josh, you know, set it up. We put the scaffolding and mm-hmm. everything out there. And I'm in shorts, a t-shirt, and flip-flops. And we're carrying this, I mean, a real pane of glass. We're carrying this thing
heavy.
Out through the yard. It's heavy. And I'm thinking, if we drop this, we're both going to the hospital. It's over with. And we're, you know, he built this little rigged, you know, to put the glass in. We're hanging off the scaffolding. We're hanging it up. You know, and I'm looking around going, this is not going to be good. This plane's going to hit this thing. There's going to be glass going all over the place. I would, honestly, I think I was 100 yards away. I'm like, I don't even want to be anywhere near there. You know, Josh Scott had his, you know, like this ballistic jacket on. He had goggles on, you know, and I thought, this is going to be bad.
That was the beauty of running wide cam that day. I was far away from
it's
the...
It's almost... there's a level of that in almost any episode. In the speed challenge where David almost killed me. I'm the same way with riding in cars with other people. I have to be the one that's driving.
Yeah.
So, like, even just David's out testing the Viggen, and he put this huge monster motor in. It's, you know, it's going like 80 miles an hour. But he'll come and do low passes coming right at you and, like, last second turn it and do a go around. And it's just, I'm just like, and especially when you're looking through a camera, too, because you can't tell how close they are because you might be zoomed in or you might be wide, you know, and you just hear it, but you can't look because you're looking through a viewfinder.
Yeah.
And it's just like...
And it's funny you say that because I'll tell a quick story. I was off work that day because it was the coldest day of the year. And I sent a text out to David, Chad, Josh. I said, hey, I'm off work.
For the vegan
For the day. Vegan.
Yeah.
And I said, hey, if anybody needs any help or anything, I'm, you know, hanging out. And David says, I need you. We got to shoot the vegan today. And I'm thinking, are you crazy? So at first I'm thinking, okay, we're going to go out back here and maybe run out, shoot a little bit or whatever. So I get down here and he's like, no, we're going down to Chad's. We're going to shoot all day outside. And I'm like, do you do realize this is the coldest day of the year in Ohio? Crazy. My car says minus 15. I said, how did you even get Dave and Brian to even, you know, come out?
Kidding.
And we get down there and we're shooting and everything. And the one shot that's actually in the video is when he landed, he was kind of taxiing around on the ground. Dave's standing right in front, and he's just full throttle, and it's going right towards
Dave.
Yeah,
I noticed that.
And I was like, you're going to hit him. You're just going to take Dave out. I mean, instantly.
He does not stop.
Just instantly, straight up right over his head. Like, and Dave never even flinched, never moved. I couldn't believe it. I was like, oh, my gosh, I can't believe
I hope that the Swede's luck never runs out.
Oh.
because he's had some lucky moments, like, well, just pulling the battery out of his Vigan that's engulfed in flames.
Yeah.
Just to save his receiver.
Yeah. Whatever. We'll throw it back in the fire.
Well, he was pulling stuff, and Chad's like, get away. That tank's going to blow up.
Uh-huh.
He's like, no, it's fine. And then he stepped away, luckily, to close the episode. And as soon as he stepped away, it blew up.
Oh, man.
He's like, oh, man.
That day was so cold. And he did better than me. Like, we were filming, and we were trying to do some flying together and everything. And he's talking, you know, and my hands were numb, even though we had the radio gloves and everything. And poor Brian, I let Brian borrow my fingerless gloves because he had these little wimpy gloves. And Brian, that's not going to work, you know. And Dave Knopf's like, Chris, you got to talk a little bit. My face was so numb. Like, I couldn't even talk. My face was so numb.
It was just so cold. And David always makes comments like, oh, this is the type of weather I learned to fly in.
Yeah, exactly.
Back in Sweden.
I'm like, so that was quite the day. But anyway, Eric, I know you have a lot of multi-rotor stuff. You're kind of really into that, aren't you?
Yeah.
Like to play around with the filming part, videos and stuff.
You build your own, right?
Yeah. It's funny because I you know, obviously it was just single rotor helicopter and airplanes for, I mean, almost 20-some years. So pushing 30, I guess, to date myself here. But I got into multi-rotors, and I've never looked back. And I don't think that – I mean, I've flown two airplanes in the last –
You
got to
be kidding. Really?
Yeah, that's all that I fly.
Wow. And I think we have an episode out with your – is it a 700 size?
It's a 700 T-Rex, but it's got an 800 conversion kit on it with stretch blades and stretch tail boom. And, yeah, that thing's a beast.
That thing is scary.
Yeah, I mean, I'm so used to flying around it because I fly it pretty often, so it's not
that
as
bad.
And I know that, like, when we shot that episode, I read, you know, some of the comments, and I read the comments to, like, almost all the episodes, but the comments on that one were like, I can't believe you're standing so close to that thing, and so on and so forth. But I guess you kind of, when you're the one in control of it, you know, kind of like what you're talking about with David flying at somebody at 100 miles an hour.
You know what you're doing
in
your mind.
You're more comfortable with it. But, you know, on the flip side, I understand that, you know, that's swinging a 5.5-foot pair of carbon fiber swords at that point. And, you know, you have a mechanical failure, I guess I would get hurt. But I'm a little more leery. I read an article a couple of months back about that guy in New York. Did you hear about that?
Yes.
600 T-Rex that, like, when I think it was a 500 or a 600.
Right.
I mean, he was dead in 30 seconds when it hit him. So, yeah, it obviously there's a danger factor with that thing that the multi-rotors don't have. Mm-hmm. You know, you're getting stitches with a multi-rotor, you're getting killed with a big T-Rex. So, speaking to the multi-rotor, I mean, I love it. My first one was a tiny little quad, and it was pretty, like, less known. It was the, I don't know if you remember, the very first Weak Signals show. Were you with us that time when we went to Toledo?
No, not the first one.
That first year, Miniature Aircraft had kind of tried to get into the multi-rotor market, and they had this thing called the Rotor X-404.
Uh-huh.
And a friend of mine had actually flown for, was on their flight, their helicopter team. And so he put me in touch with one of the guys there, and I was able to actually get one in exchange for doing a video about it.
Nice.
And so I built it, and I did a little promo for it, and that was my first quadcopter. And it had a KK board on it that they had branded and so on. But yeah, so that's kind of where it all started, and I found some of its shortcomings and didn't like it, because obviously I got it to put cameras on it, and it wouldn't do that real well. So I started designing and just making my own.
Yeah, actually,
from there.
Speaking of that, I came across an old article that you posted a while ago, which I'll post it on. Actually, I already have it in the show notes. We'll post with the podcast. But I think it seemed kind of like when you were first experimenting and figuring stuff out. But it's a really well put together article. A lot of really good information.
Oh,
and
yeah.
You tried tricopters. You tried quadcopters. You tried all these different things, and you gave explanations for why you tried things and that why you liked it, why you didn't. So I'll post that in the show notes.
Oh,
and
cool.
You can see like the Angry Bird hex. I love
that thing.
That was kind of what came from that. Mm-hmm. And I think my Rotor X is actually pictured in that article that you mentioned.
Maybe,
it's got the little googly eyes on it.
That
was actually Josh Bixler's dad was like, you should put eyeballs on the front of that. So I did it.
There's something with the Bixlers and googly eyes.
Yeah.
All of them. They have some weird obsession with the googly eyes. Josh is going to make a nutball out of a giant googly eye.
Oh, jeez. So what do you find most now?
I mean. I'm actually going to go back and read that article because I want to see what I said.
see if it's still viable.
It was probably a year or two old.
I tried tricopters. I tried quadcopters. My biggest thing, like to start at the tricopter, I mean, they're fun, but for filming at that time, they just weren't as stable as a quad. And then they weren't as stable as the quad wasn't as stable as the hex. And so I kept moving up through. And I flew that Y6 copter that David built with those DT750 motors on it when they tried to lift that plane.
Yeah, I remember that.
So I've got to fly a lot of different ones. And, you know, the tri, because it only has three lifting points, you know, I abandoned that right away. And also when they flip, you know, the tail servo just tears right out of them.
Uh-huh.
So I don't know if that has changed, and you know, you might be able to speak to that flying a tricopter.
Well, again, I'm fairly inexperienced. I started flying multi-rotors a little less than a year ago, and obviously you progress pretty quick when you have a job like I do, and blessed to have. But I fly a tricopter, and I built a quad. I think I built two quads, and then I built, I think this is like my third variation of a tricopter, which I'm still using the same Batbone frame. It's one of the original prototypes that Chad had, and it's got like some flaws, but it's really beat up, but it's still working really well, and it's been through some crashes, some serious crashes.
I think the thing about tricopters that I do like is they fly the closest to a helicopter, so they're a little bit more nimble, and I'm actually kind of looking at going back and revisiting tricopters. I never thought I'd say that. Stabilization gimbals that we have now, because the tricopter the roll and pitch on those things can get a little bit unstable for filming. Mm-hmm. They fly great, but for filming you see that in the footage. But with the gimbals that they have now, like, so I've had this dream of building a big 6S like DSLR carrying tricopter, but I don't know, so we'll see about that. But I went to hexacopters. I fly a flat hex. It's 900 millimeter. It's powered by 6S batteries. And so, like, I went huge because I ultimately it's to carry cameras.
Oh.
I fly for fun here and there, but ultimately it's...
But you really like to play around with the filming and the cameras. And so what do you have for setups, or what do you like to use?
Right now, the copter I'm flying right now is a 900 millimeter hex frame that I designed. I designed the camera mount. Like, that was the biggest challenge through the whole thing, was getting, not only isolating where vibration was coming from, reducing it to the most minimal amount that I could have, and then being able to dampen what was left. So once I accomplished that, then I started worrying about how the copter flew. Mm-hmm. And so, this big hexacopter, I can carry up a 5D. I can get about 7 to 8 minutes of flight time with two 6S batteries carrying a 5D and a Zeiss lens. So for higher end work, that's a nice setup.
Uh-huh.
Most people, if they ask you to fly something for them that's big, they want to be able to fly a 5D. They're kind of stuck on that camera. So that was what I aimed for. So I have six... Sinistar is the motors. I buy all the stuff from Quadrocopter out in Montana. So my motors, and I'm flying Zor 14-inch wooden props. And so, it's pretty standard when you look at my copter versus some of the other stuff that's out there.
Right. Now, do you fly, like, again, I'm I don't know much about it like you do, Alex, or you do, Eric. But, like, I know when Chad flies his octocopter, he's got the self-stabilization and the altitude. Do you do a lot of that, too?
Or? Yeah, I fly pretty much all DJI stuff for flight controllers. And then, we fly in ADI mode some when we're filming. It just depends on what we're filming. If it's a chase scene where I've got to chase a quad or a dirt bike or a truck or something like that, I usually fly manual mode because the ADI mode on DJI limits the forward pitch, and so you can't fly as aggressively in ADI mode, so it just all depends. If we're filming B-roll on something, then I'll click into attitude hold so that, you know.
Which, do you fly through your gimbal, or?
I fly through the separate FPV camera. I've got a board camera. And the whole reason for that is so that I can see what the copter's doing. Yeah. And then usually we're running a second camera guy on the camera.
Okay.
So I don't even worry about that. I put the copter where it belongs and let him worry about framing in the camera. So.
All right. Since, you know, let's see. Where do I want to go with it? Since you really like to play around with the quads and the cameras and what you have kind of your own little business and everything, what do you think about all the stuff going down with the FAA and them trying to shut down companies? And now real quick before we get into this, did you hear about what happened up in Lakewood, up in Cleveland?
No, I didn't.
The engineering
fill me in here.
The engineering department bought a Phantom. And they bought it to
like
go
through the city.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. They paid, you know, $1,000 for it.
Sure.
They bought it, and what they were using it for is they were going to go around and inspect their outlet pipes. You know, in some of them places where they put them, you know, they're down over a bank or a cliff or coming. Some of them, they, I guess, were coming out up around Lake Erie, and they wanted to check them for ice and debris and everything. So instead of having somebody trying to climb down and all around there, they spend $1,000 and they can go in there, check them all. Everything's fine, and. And the news was talking about it. Well, I guess an FAA guy heard about it, and they went up and they shut him down. Said, nope, can't do this.
See, now that surprises me because I thought, and again, I've read some of the stuff on this. I'm not an expert by any means, but I'll comment. What I've read about FAA regulation is that you're not allowed to use UAV systems, you know, aircraft of any radio, you know, any radio controlled type aircraft for paying work. So I guess there's probably a real gray area there because technically they're just out flying it as part of what they do. They're not necessarily saying, hey, I'll fly this for you for X amount of dollars.
They're
not invoicing or charging for it. So that was my understanding. But, you know, there's also the, you know, the gray area wrapped around the word commercial.
Yeah.
What really defines commercial work?
And from what I understood, though, the guy was saying that they had to fill out all this paperwork and get like some kind of certificate or something to be able to use that.
There's an exemption certificate that the FAA can release now. I know a lot of police, we've flown with State Highway Patrol, DEA, FBI, and a bunch of local police departments, and mostly demonstration stuff just because these guys are interested in multi-rotors and didn't really know, you know, where to find somebody with one. So most times it's, you know, the police departments, because of who they are, can get a release and an exemption to be able to use them for, you know, a lot of fire departments are using them, so on and so forth. So I'm kind of shocked to hear they got shut down. But at the same token, I flew with an FAA guy standing right beside me a year ago.
No kidding.
Up at the hardware in Hartville.
Oh, yeah,
Right before they were open. I guess it's been about 2 years ago. I had my Angry Bird quad, and they had a full-scale helicopter up there putting the HVAC units on top of the building.
Oh, yeah.
And I was getting air-to-air footage with the full-scale helicopter, and I was, you know,
no kidding.
I was close. I mean, I wasn't dangerously close.
Right.
I mean, I was obviously, you know.
Now, do you wonder?
And the FAA guy was standing right there, and he thought my multi-rotor was cool and didn't say a word to me about it. So
you just got to wonder if it's the pressure of the people with all the drone stuff going on. It's just putting pressure on them, you know, to try to do something or.
Well, I think it's just a huge undertaking because there is no regulation right now.
Sure. Yeah.
So when they, you know, in tech, you know, supposedly they're in the process of laying all that out right now.
I think 2015 is the proposed date.
That's what I've heard.
Supposedly.
Yeah, and there's so much, there's so many different.
Yeah.
It's such a huge topic, like, because in my opinion, if I had to guess, it's going to end up, you know, just like, there'll probably be hobby regulations. You know, if you fly at a club or if you fly under, 400 feet, that's fine. But if you want to fly over a public road or a populated area, you're just going to have to log your flight. You're going to have to do a pre-flight inspection. It's going to be the same stipulations that's on a full-scale aircraft. And in my opinion, that's the way it should be.
Right. I agree with that.
You can't just, go on a long range over yeah. development.
Well, and I think ultralights kind of had that same type of I don't think the hysteria was there because there was no social media back then, and so it wasn't mm-hmm. as well known, but the same thing, anyone and their brother could get an ultralight, go up without a pilot's license and go fly.
Exactly.
And I know there was some there was some uproar about that, but again, because there's no social media back then, I don't think it ever mm-hmm. got it.
Yeah, well, and the fact that there's still a visible human element in
sure
in an ultralight flying over compared to a drone. People who have no idea about this technology or this hobby,
right.
they see or hear the word drone.
Exactly.
They think of like the drone from Star Wars, it has a mind of its own,
right.
and it's peering through your window.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. I got to wonder if, this whole thing going on with Raphael Parker, Trappy, mm-hmm. Once this case gets settled, which side it's going to go, if that's going to have some kind of impact, down the road too.
What was that whole deal, if you don't mind going into that? I know, didn't he fly at Virginia?
Yeah, he did.
I read a little bit about it.
A commercial shoot for them, I believe, right?
I don't know. I forget. It's in one of our podcasts.
Right.
The podcast that we did with Trappy,
they touched on that.
Right. Talked pretty heavily on it. But I think pretty much what happened is he recorded some video
right.
at this university, and he ended up getting paid. I don't know if it was a demonstration or what. He did something there, and he got paid, and
right.
he also gave them the footage of their campus because they thought it was cool.
Right.
And of all the things that he's done,
I know,
the FAA decided to take him to court on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's pretty serious, too, mm-hmm. from what I understand.
Sure.
So, just wonder if they kind of go, okay, this is okay or whatever, that could be a deciding factor down the road with some rules and regulations of which way they swing.
Sure. I know a lot of film guys that are doing this. Like, on one end, I think there are so many people that are doing this that they just can't control it all.
Right.
And like what you were saying, unfortunately, there's probably got to be some type of a regulation so that everyone's just not out wrecking phantoms into the sides of buildings mm-hmm. in major cities and
yeah.
so on. So, I understand the FAA's concern for regulation, but, a lot of film guys, there's so many people that are out filming with copters, whether it be carrying a $50,000 film
right.
camera
right.
or carrying a GoPro. It's just
yeah.
it's like an ant colony. There's
right.
so many.
Right.
It's like how
you look at movies, and I don't know how this works or how it happens, but I think I was watching not the newest, but The Hobbit, for example. But I see it all the time. You see shots that are
not full scale.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I know, like I've done, as everybody has probably known, and I know you're probably going to ask me this, as I've flown some stuff for Discovery Channel.
Right.
And, here's the thing is right now under those FAA regulations, we just can't charge for doing it. There's nothing saying that I can't go fly for them, that I can't get the experience mm-hmm. so that as soon as those regulations are lifted, hopefully it's 2015 and doesn't get pushed back any farther. But I already have the experience for flying for some major production companies so I can hit the ground running and be able to start charging. I've got the demo reels. I've got the experience. I've flown my copters, down to little things like how to pack it and get it into a box on an airline. And, mm-hmm. there's a lot of logistics
yep.
to moving
yes.
a big copter and
yes.
camera setup. So, if that hopefully maybe might answer one
yeah.
of the questions you were going to ask about. But, yeah, Discovery Channel, I know for instance, they've banned full-scale recording from full-scale flying
right.
With helicopters and so on. And they actually moved to hot air balloons, which is
yeah.
kind of your expertise.
Even like documentaries like, what is it called? Planet Earth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those shots where they're creeping over the tree lines and getting real close to giraffes.
I guess some people got killed in some hot air balloons even because
were
trying to fly some shots. They got tangled up in trees or wires and so on.
Oh,
and
yeah.
so they banned it all.
Oh, really?
And so when a friend of mine, I kind of found Discovery through a friend of a friend. And so one of of the production guys. The Discovery Channel uses small production companies, much like, you know, what Chad has with StoneCap or whatever. So some of those production companies will take on a certain number of shows, and so Discovery hires them out freelance. And so I got in with one of those guys in New York, and he was telling me about it, that, you know, there was a helicopter crash and there was at least one hot air balloon accident, and they said no more manned flight. So when they found, they actually started trying to fly their own octocopter, but couldn't get it right. And so it never got off the ground in a way that they could use it. And I just happened to be there right at the right time and was able to get in and fly some stuff for them. And so they said, hey, if it's UAV, we're all good because nobody's going to die. So, I know that's obviously
a huge
concern.
There's a place for it. And it is useful, not only for the video side of things, but also, like, I've watched some really, really cool TED Talks on autonomous flight, basically using, UASs, in places like South America, where, there's these villages of people that need medicines for different things, and they're not accessible by a full-scale plane, they're just not accessible. And basically how, if it was legalized, basically how, I forget the name of it, but it's a TED Talk. I'll find it and post it in the show notes. But really, really interesting. There's all kinds of applications. There's people in Africa that are using Bixlers to find poachers killing rhinos.
Right.
That's jobs. There's a lot of good.
Look at the Olympics this year. They're using them.
There's
like
a hexacopter
crazy.
At the snowboard.
Yeah.
Going back to film, but shows like Top Gear, I know for a fact they use them. So it's definitely a good thing. And don't get me wrong, there can be some bad things that go along with it, especially if people use them in the wrong way.
Right.
But yeah, the sooner the regulation comes, I think the better.
I agree. I think that once that hits and we can have guideline,
right,
at least, even if I've given this a lot of thought, obviously, because I'm pretty far invested into this. I've got close to $10,000 in my camera, my gimbal, my copter, if not over at this point. So, when you invest that kind of money, obviously the quicker that they can get this under control so that we kind of know where to go and have a direction instead of just being in limbo right now.
Right.
So, I got to be really careful. When we fly, it was funny because I did some stuff down in Amish country, and I gave the FPV goggles to an Amish guy.
The
reaction out of this guy. He thought that was the coolest thing. He wanted, and like you mentioned, doing good. He's like, I wish I had one of these. I'd fly out over my fields. I could check my crops.
Yeah, exactly.
And, so there's so many cool benefits to it, but I think the news, the media is the media.
Yeah.
Obviously. I think drones are the new pit bull. And what I mean by that is pit bulls had such a huge, following of people, whether people loved them or hated them because of what the news made them out to be. There were so many false, this and that and
stories.
The other thing, and it sold stories,
Right.
Chihuahua Mall's Child doesn't sound as bad as pit bull.
Right.
And so now the new buzzword is drone.
Drone.
And so the drone, when I think of a drone, I think of a predator armed with missiles
exactly.
The movies. I don't think of a DJI Phantom with a GoPro filming your family picnic or a kayak on a river.
Yeah.
So I think it's educating people and letting people know, but it's just an uphill battle, I think. So
now, see if you agree with me. I could be way off in left field about this, but I would think for commercial use, the FAA would be all about it, because I think, if you're doing something for commercial use, I would think you would be experienced. You might be in a more of a controlled environment. You know what I mean? So
you probably have to get licensed
or something. So, private. I don't understand why they're picking on the, the commercial aspect of it.
Sure. And maybe, I was thinking about that a lot. And this could even be used as a way to generate income even for the FAA. You just mentioned licensing.
Right.
I mean, you could put in numbers on these things as experimental aircraft. You could have to be registered. You'd have to go to ground school.
Not only for the FAA, but just the economy in general.
Yeah.
Sure.
It's going to create jobs. It's going to do good
things. I think there's nothing but positive. But again, it's kind of in limbo. And so we're all kind of just sitting back waiting to see what they do and how they do it. Part of me wants to just stay in the shadows and just kind of, wait and see how it goes. The other part of me wants to go to my local FAA representative and say, hey, let me show you what we do. Let me show you how these things work so that you can make edge. Because when I flew with that FAA guy in front of me a year or so ago, he'd never even seen one in real life
before. You got to be kidding.
Yeah. So there's a lot of just misconceptions that mm-hmm. goes along with.
And a lot of people out there are saying, oh, the FAA, this, that, that. It's like I said earlier, it's a huge undertaking.
Sure.
And, you know, I think that they'll get their ducks in a row eventually. Yeah, it's I don't know.
Yeah.
On one hand, it could be an epidemic, and on the other hand, there's more for those guys probably to worry about than a DJI Phantom flying around either. So,
right. And there's talk out there like, oh, they're going to ban our hobby for forever. I really highly doubt
that. I doubt that.
Right.
I think that they're smarter than that. Yeah. It's just a huge undertaking.
Right.
It's going to be a lot of work.
The only thing I could maybe think of is if something major happens before they do get some regulations where you got some idiot that's
I was
gonna
just
be
about to say that.
Up at 3,000 feet, 8 miles away, and slams into a light aircraft or something.
I read an article just, I don't know, a month or two ago where some guy had a quadcopter and it had LED lighting on it, and he was at a couple thousand feet with this thing, and he was in landing approach to a major airport. And
they saw it.
They saw it coming in. And so I think that's just bound to happen. Mm-hmm. You know, that's why they call them accidents. Obviously, the guy's probably not going to try to take out a commuter aircraft.
Right.
I think if people, you know, you just mentioned it, they're going to ban our hobby. Well, if people keep stuff like that up, then sure, that's the fast track to getting a fist slammed down on the table to make a regulation because people can't.
Right. That's my only worry is if there's a major catastrophe before they get the regulations,
it'll
that
be
could
bad.
Really hurt us.
Yeah. So I think as hobbyists, we have to be responsible.
Right.
I mean, we got to not fly above 400 feet.
Right.
And not fly near major airports and so on and so forth. I think there's some element of education where, you know, the DJI Phantom is I keep picking on that or referring to that, but anyone can buy one of those things for a few hundred dollars and go out and fly FPV and film. And, you know, the one other thing everybody's talking about with these, you know, the drones is privacy issues.
Right.
And this is obviously just an opinion, you know, that's what we're here for, right?
Yep.
I can take my iPhone and get just as much. I can hold it out a second story window and have the exact same view as what you're getting from a Phantom.
I think it's just
it's null and void at that point.
To me. I love Chad's comment. It goes, what's the difference if I go out and buy a telescope?
Yeah, right?
that's just brilliant.
Sure, or hold my iPhone on a broom handle or whatever. Like, you're still going to be able to get a vantage point from
it.
I think people give up that privacy in the world we live
even
in.
Even if you ban it, there's still going to be spies and they're still going to get you.
Right.
Yeah, right?
keep on freaking out.
Sure.
I got to laugh. There was a funny Twitter post. I can't remember who it was, but you guys heard about that Corvette Museum?
Yeah.
And it had the sinkhole and all the Corvettes went down in the hole. Well, it was a news story. Station and I don't think they got with somebody. They flew
a drone down.
Down in it, and the guy posted goes, "Well, the FAA can't get us for anything here. We're indoor flying." I thought that was pretty.
That's
good.
That's awesome.
So, hey, let's. Anything else on that? I mean, we've been on that for quite a while. Do you want to?
Oh, that's a big topic.
It is. I mean, you could go.
We could talk
that.
For hours about that.
Right, sure, right. That's good.
I'm going to tell a little story about this last weekend. It was pretty good. I know Alex probably knows. I have an issue with flying in the wind. I have a love-hate relationship with it. I mean, I want to go out and fly all the time. And a lot of times, you know, you go out and it's 15 miles an hour and you're like, oh, man. And you get out there and it's really, I mean, you're having fun, but you're not because you're fighting the airplane. You don't want to auger it in the ground. And I've been through several different airplanes or trying to find something, you know, that's really good for wind flying. And I think I finally got some working on a wing I'm building. And
I was going to say, I think a wing is probably the best thing for wind. But.
It is, I think. And I'll tell you what I found is it's a site called Crash Test Hobby. And a guy over there named Lee, he started building wings for combat. And they have no winglets on
them. Oh, yeah, I saw that.
They're laminated. The cool thing about it is that he runs a string around the outside that's glued in. I mean, these things I've seen, there's video after video after video of these things just slamming into the ground at like 40, 50 miles an hour. They bounce 10 feet in the air. You pick it up, you throw it.
So is there any vertical stabilization on it at all?
No.
So it's like a B2.
Exactly.
Yeah. But it still uses elevons, right?
Yeah, still uses elevons, but you put a special angle on the end that still helps with the airflow. But there's, no winglets.
I think what it does, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think it creates an equal amount of drag on each wingtip that it tracks. And it doesn't...
Right.
It doesn't yaw.
Yeah.
Because there's an equal amount of drag force pushing on the tip of each wing, because there's a blunt part of on each wingtip.
Right.
In the front of the airfoil.
Yeah.
Is that
sounds about right. I think he explains it a little bit if you go on his website.
I don't know if we are looking at the same thing. I saw an article posted on flighttest.com probably about 6 or 7 months ago. And I remember that because these guys, and it was for combat.
Uh-huh.
They were flying these wings, pusher props,
yep,
with no winglets. And
yeah,
they just kind of put a flat edge on the front of the leading edge on each wingtip, and it makes it.
Yeah,
so
there's two cuts. I forget the exact angles, but there's two cuts on the end that you cut out, and it just flies,
it's pretty,
no problem.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
But the
idea.
Things are bulletproof. I mean, literally bulletproof. And I think he's got some stuff out now for FPV. So it's pretty cool stuff. But let's see. Saturday I got up, and it was snowing, but there was no wind out. And I mean, you know, I know the guys in the South are going to, they don't want to hear it no more, but this has been a brutal, just brutal winter.
Well, the guys in the South got snow, too.
Yeah,
now,
that's
so
true. But the funny thing is, I've done more flying this winter outside than I have ever. I don't know why. It just, mm-hmm, I guess you have to accept, and you're like, well, I'm going flying.
Yeah,
forget it.
Sure. I don't need to be able to feel my fingers.
No, you know. So I got up. No, I take that back. It was Sunday morning when we got that snow, and I got up, and wanted Wayne to go out, but he had to go to church, so I was like, oh, man. So recently I cut I hope my wife's not listening. Recently I cut most of the trees out of my front yard in the fall. I was out flying around. I got a couple planes stuck in the trees, and I just had it. They were just old pine trees that had been there for years and years, and I said, that's it. And so one weekend I got the chainsaw out, and I cut like 6 trees, major trees down, and they're gone. So I got more of a wide open yard.
So there
now
was motive behind
that.
Yeah,
there's kind of motive behind that. So as you guys know, I got the Fly Zone Beaver that we fly the daylights
those
out of this
awesome
thing. And I got it on skis and everything. And I got it all ready to go. And I'm like, I don't know if I want to load up and go out there without Wayne. Maybe I'll just wait. But I wanted to go so bad because it was snowing so good and there was no wind. I'm like, oh, man, this is hard to pass up. So I actually got the Beaver out, and I walked outside, and I put it on the road, and I looked around. And I was like, I don't know about this, because long time ago, when I was learning to fly, like everybody else, I had the Hobby Zone Super Cub. Got pretty comfortable with it, and I'm like, you know what? I think I can fly this around my neighborhood. Well, little did I know, I took off, and the thing, you know, it doesn't have much climb, and I was trying to circle around, get enough altitude to get up above the trees. Well, I didn't make it. Right over into the neighbor's tree, and I mean, it got in there really good. And I spent like days over there with everything from bows and arrows with string to bolts on. I mean, anything I could think of to get this
to
thing
throw
out.
At this,
yeah,
thing,
to try to get this thing out of here. And the neighbor, he just,
we've all been there.
Yeah,
he just would laugh at me. He'd look out his way. Oh, there's an idiot out there trying to get that plane out of the tree. So one day, me and my boys were over there again. I mean, I think I had a little bow and arrow. I was shooting string up, you know, trying to get a hold of it. And he comes out, and he's just laughing. He goes, I can get that out of the tree for you. I'm like, oh, no way, really? You got the giant, what do you got? You know, I got a 12-gauge shotgun. I'll get it right out for you. So that thing sat up there for probably 3 or 4 months before we actually got a huge windstorm, and it come down in about 900 pieces. And so ever since that, anything relatively big, I was like, I don't know.
So did he end up shooting it with the shotgun at
no,
all?
Or,
okay,
no,
yeah,
no. It stayed up
advisable
there. No.
We did that one time out at Josh Bixler's at the field. This was years before flight test ever was even thought of, and we got a plane stuck in a tree. Just a quick tangent. And we also had, like, we would all shoot like little plinker 22s out there.
Oh yeah.
And Jim, Josh's older brother, uh-huh, Jim and I would shoot 22s sometimes instead of flying. And my brother was over there with a 12-gauge, a skeet gun, and we were doing a little bit of that in the backfield, and an airplane got stuck. And so my brother, you know, at the prompting of everyone, starts firing the 12-gauge at this thing. And there was nothing left.
Oh,
I mean,
imagine.
There was BBs through the servos, through the receiver. It was just worthless. So, yeah, not advised.
Oh, that's hilarious.
You wouldn't have had much left in the end.
So I did get the champ out, and I cranked that around in the snow and was having a good time. And Wayne finally got out there. I said, hey, we got to go fly. He's like, all right, all right. So we loaded up and headed out to the field. Well, By this time, late in the afternoon, for one, it was really snowing. And for two, the wind was gusting. It was 12 miles an hour, gusting to 21. So we pulled the beavers out, and we flew. We flew for probably a good hour out there, and it was just crazy. And I have a thing I've been trying to do for quite a while. It hasn't happened yet, and it probably maybe needs to be a bigger plane. But I've been trying to see if you could get a more scale RC plane to ice up, you know, like a full scale airplane. Mm-hmm. I think I don't know if it's wing design or just, you know, being scale, you know, smaller or something. So far, I haven't been able to get any kind of airplane to ice up and come out of the sky.
I've had ice on my multirotor props.
Have you really?
But it was a couple weeks ago, actually.
No kidding.
Yeah. But I was flying, actually. It was so cold that the Multistar, and David was telling me about the technical specs, but one of my ESCs, the Multistar at the time that I was using it, it froze up. Apparently, David said there's some kind of crystal in there that doesn't like cold weather. I don't know. But it ended up freezing. But when I picked up the wreckage, I noticed there was ice on the props.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, just on like the leading edge on like the center, close to the prop adapter or prop shaft.
Uh-huh.
On both sides, there's just a little tiny bit of ice.
Wow.
Icing's caused by, correct me if I'm wrong, humidity and what else has to be really close together before that can start happening?
To be honest, I don't know. It was
snow. I remember from ground school from the real airplanes.
Yeah, like
years
the temperature
ago,
dew point got to be real close
together.
It has
to be right together.
Right. You
got to
have the right moisture.
So what I'm wondering, and this could be completely just hearsay, but I'm wondering if with a radio controlled aircraft, because it's small, if that has to be a tighter tolerance to be able to
I think it's a scale thing, just like how, like, if you got an ultra micro Cub and you try to put micro skis on it, it doesn't work because of the scale of the snowflakes to the airplane. So I'm just guessing the scale snowflakes to an RC airplane, you know, unless you got something maybe quarter scale, I don't know. But we flew at one point it was snowing so hard that we barely got 15, 20 feet away. You almost
couldn't
lost sight
plane,
of this thing.
Sure.
And I mean, the wind's howling. We're at half throttle and they were hovering. We could, if you dead sticked it, they were going backwards.
Yeah.
And we flew for an hour, never not one drop of icing, nothing on us. So I was like,
well, there wasn't a lot on my props. It was just like,
just a little.
I was like, what is, I thought it was like a stress fracture or something. I don't know. But then I put my finger on it and it melted. I was like, huh.
Wow. I've flown a lot in the snow in the winter with my multi-rotors, and I haven't seen that. So I wonder if you just happen to have that perfect day when that...
Yeah, that's crazy. So anyway, that was my little story over the weekend.
That's cool.
Hey, the Nuremberg Toy Fair just happened over Germany. I don't know. Do you guys know anything about that? Or
not too much.
Not too much. That's kind of basically every year they have that over there, and that's where all the latest and greatest stuff happens to be... comes out and you first hear about it. So I got on the website and was trying to look around. I dug up some of the new stuff that's coming out by, I would say, like the major manufacturers like Hobico and FlyZone and Horizon Hobby and Multiplex and stuff. So do you guys want to find out what's coming our way?
Yeah, sure.
All right. First, we'll dive into Horizon a little bit. They got quite a few things that really came out. One thing, everybody knows the Super Cub. They're bringing it out with just like the Apprentice. They're going to put the safe technology on it. So you're going to have the AS3X with the safe technology coming out on the Super Cub. So I think that's pretty good news. They got some multi-rotors. They got some new helicopters coming out. Let me see what we got here. They got a new Blade 200SR ready to fly. Or a bind and fly helicopter. Now, that's a fixed pitched fly barless kind of a mid to entry level helicopter. Mm-hmm. But the cool thing about it is they put the safe technology on it. So just think when you were learning to fly helicopters and you're cranking around out of there and you get all disoriented, boop, hit the oh crap button, right back level. And it's,
yeah, I'd be interested to try that. I'm not a huge heli guy or anything, but one of my first RC things was the original Blade MSR.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The little micro, tiny one.
Yep. That thing was tough to fly.
Yeah.
I got it down, but then they came out with the MS... was it the MSXR or like the Fly Barless version?
Yeah, that was, yep.
I like the original version better than the Fly Barless.
I heard that from a lot of people.
I'd be interested to see if the fixed pitch Fly Barless technology has come any further, because I was not impressed with that. The second variation, which had, it had AS3X, which the first one didn't, and it had the fixed pitch Fly Barless. And it you know, it flew fine, but it wasn't nearly as forgiving. So I'd be interested to give it a shot.
I think it's coming around.
I wouldn't be surprised if it's come a long way. But
I mean, how many times when you were learning to fly a helicopter, you spent, or at least I did, I'd spend 2 hours rebuilding the whole head, new shaft, everything. And you go out there and you're so nervous because you didn't want to crash again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even to try a figure eight or something. And now, you know, you go out there and the thing gets out of hand, boom, oh crap, switch, you're perfectly level. And I think that's going to be a big factor.
I want to say it was the Blade 120 SR, which was one of the first ones.
Yeah,
that
that's
came
the same
out
as
in
the
MSR series.
And the MSR came out after that, and it's just the same thing pretty much, except micro.
Yeah.
So
my buddy Kirk had bought one of those SRs, and it was literally his first helicopter, and had success, and it didn't have AS3X on it. So it was a
that
pretty
decent
platform. So that 200, gonna go look that up afterward.
Oh, are you?
Yeah, just for fun.
They got a couple new quadcopters coming out too. They got the new Blade 200 bind and fly coming out, and that's just like the larger brother of the Nano QX.
Wow.
Yeah. So, and I watched a couple videos of it. That thing looks pretty cool.
I flew your Nano that one day in here, Alex, and those are pretty cool.
Yeah. So that
can't plug the Nano QX enough.
I know.
That's
so you know, having the big brother to that, you know, for the summer, man, that thing could be pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
They got a new camera coming out called the CG01, I think it's called. It's kind of like a GoPro knockoff, I'm going to say. It's got long range Wi-Fi built in. It shoots 1080p at 30 frames a second recording, or it'll do 720 at 30 streaming with the Wi-Fi. They got a new Phoenix V5 simulator coming out. Let's see what else they got coming out here. They got the new eFlight Elusive 2.2 meter ARF, and I'm going to say that's kind of like a warm liner / sailplane.
Yeah.
I watched some videos of it and everything. It looks like you could fly pretty fast. But what I found out, though, it actually has the same airfoil as the Mystique glider.
Ah.
So supposedly it's supposed to do both, either or. And the cool thing about it, it's a big plane, you know, 2.2 meters, but yet it only flies off of a Power 15 motor and a 2200 battery.
Nice.
So that's something that pretty cool. Let's see. Got the new DX6 transmitter radio
that
coming out.
That looks pretty nice.
Have you seen that, Eric?
No, I haven't.
It is nice looking.
Wow.
Backlit.
I was just going to ask, is it backlit?
Backlit.
That was my
it really kind of
biggest pet peeve
is
about the 6.
After like the new 9 and the 18.
Yeah, it has it doesn't have the bendy antenna anymore.
Oh, that's good, because those things broke.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
And here's the cool thing. 250 model memory. Voice alerts, just like the 9 and the new 18. Wireless trainer, so no more buddy cord.
Mm-hmm.
Does the air, the heli, and the sailplane, and plus it still has the built-in telemetry. So that's going to be
pretty impressive.
That's bang for your buck for a 6.
I totally agree.
Do you know how much it is?
I don't. I didn't write that down. I don't know if I've seen a price on it.
Yeah, I haven't either. That's why I was curious.
Let's see. Oh, they got the, you know, they're real big with their AS3X. So now they have the new 7 and 9 channel AS3X receiver. And then they're going to put out a 6335 6 channel Nanolite AS3X receiver. So now, you know,
that's
some
cool.
The micro stuff, you can get it in. Parkzone's got a new Artesian sport plane coming out. Now, I dug a little deeper into this, and it's pretty cool because, as we were talking earlier, Eric, the T-28's been around for years.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, again, one of the best flying planes. I've owned three of them.
Lots of people's first plane.
Yeah, beat them into the ground. I actually still have one today. Like you said, I did the flat mod on it.
Yeah, mine's still in the garage. I haven't flown in a while, but it's still there.
So I think down the road, this is going to kind of take over. It's a little bit better built. It's got the AS3X on it, sport plane, and I think it's going to replace the T28. The cool thing about this, too, and I know they Horizon's been doing this with a lot of their, especially Park Zone planes, is they put the Vortex generators on it. So your slow speed stuff, you know, it's going to handle a lot better.
The new DX6, I just pulled it up
here. Did you see it?
Yeah, it says transmitter only on Horizon's website for $139. So
wow.
That's yeah, good. That's pretty good.
That seems pretty cheap, doesn't it? I'll tell you the other thing I kind of like that they got coming out. They got the new 350 QX AP combo blade quadcopter coming out. Now, have you seen that, Eric?
I flew the first one that they came out with. Okay. Jason over at Aerotech and I are pretty good friends.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
and
I know Jason.
He actually brought it over to my house one day. I was outside flying one of mine, and he pulls up in the driveway, and he's like, here, fly this thing. And it was cool. Like, the return back to home stuff worked really well. But some of the like, flying modes it had were really weird. Like, it would do strange things. I didn't read a whole lot about it. He just handed it to me and said, here, fly this. But it flew good. The footage that came off the GoPro native, this was right out of the box the day he got it. So props weren't balanced good, and so there was some jello in the footage. But so this is a
so
new
this
version
is,
of
this
that?
This is all new. Yeah, this is their their camera platform.
Yeah.
So now this is going to have the two-axis gimbal already on it.
Oh, okay. So that'll fix the jello.
And it's also built for their new CG01 camera that I was just talking about. But I guess also you can also use a GoPro on it. 5.8 gigahertz long-range Wi-Fi. They upped the battery to a 3,000 milliamp. Supposedly they improved the GPS on it. And it's got a new RF chipset with an external antenna, and it's going to run somewhere around $1,000.
Now, is this FPV ready, or do you have to do that yourself?
No, that's not FPV. But technically, this is on the same platform as the DJI Vision 2.
Yeah, the new Phantom
Vision.
So
I think they're going to be going neck and neck, and I think it's a little cheaper, too.
Okay.
So with the same features as a regular 350QX.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's
not bad,
cool.
Yeah. I'm anxious to see that. Maybe he'll stop by with that one.
Yeah, that
the
one's
weather's a little nicer.
Yeah, that one's a little more pricey. Okay, the last thing I got to talk about, because this is my absolute favorite thing, and I can't wait for this to come out, but they got the Ultra Micro Radian.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
That'd be cool.
And it's only $89.
So, like, Wayne has to be
geeking out about that, too. I think early in the morning, I got to work. I'm on my phone. What? I was just sending, messages. We were going back and forth.
Even the bigger one has been such a popular airplane.
Right.
So, to have an Ultra Micro with that, that's cool.
Right. And one-piece removable wings, got the carbon spar, runs off the 150 milliamp battery. It's got the AS3X. And it's pretty light. It's 28.7 inch wingspan, and it only weighs 43 grams.
Wow.
That's a good size.
Yeah. Now,
kind of a step up from a Vapor. If you learn to fly indoors on a Vapor, that'd be maybe a next.
Well, they showed it flying. I saw a video on it, and they showed it flying on a single court indoor gymnasium.
Wow. Yeah.
And like super slow.
Yeah, they powered up, shut it down, and just were just cruising around.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. Now, I've been on the forums reading a little about it, and there's one thing I don't know if I agree with them, but the biggest thing people have been complaining about is it has the standard, 8.5 millimeter pager motor on with the gearbox. So it's got a regular brushed motor in it that they've been using on their Ultra Micros. Yeah. So a lot of people are really upset about that, but
would you need more? It's a glider.
Yeah, right. And cost factor, it's only $89. So I don't know. It would probably, because all their brushless stuff is like way more expensive. Mm-hmm. I've been wanting the Ultra Micro Carbon Cub
Still $170.
It's $170 for that thing. Just because it has a brushless motor.
You get a T28.
Yeah,
a big one.
Buy the airframe. Go get a Hobby King motor and stick it.
Yeah. So I'm kind of on the fence with that. I do think they already have the brushless, like the 6400 control boards already out. Why couldn't you get the micro tail motor out of one of their helicopters and put it in there, so you can still use the gearbox, but then you'd have a complete brushless setup. So I don't.
Wait, do you What do you want? Do you want to go vertical with your
No. I'm just, you know, like.
No, I'm not saying you, but like the people out there who complain about the brushed motor.
Yeah.
What are you trying to do?
Right.
Sure.
Right. So I, you know, for what it is, for $89.
I think it's going to be really nice.
Yeah. So, man, I'm just so. So Horizon, if you're listening, we'd like about three or four of those. We'll put them through their paces for you. Hey, you were talking about. What were you? Hobby King Turnigy batteries, right?
Yes, I fly those Nanotechs.
You might be interested in this. They have a new A-Spec G2 coming out.
The Hobby King does?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
I just looked at a couple of them. I don't know how many sizes, but they're a 65 to 130C burst.
Wow.
And the 2200s are right now, they're only $30.
Helicopter guys would love that. I like for what we fly, even on my big, huge hexacopter carrying a payload, the burst isn't usually something that we have to worry about. Uh-huh. Like I fly 30C batteries.
Oh, do you really?
I've never had a
I use the Zippy. Me and David have been using the Zippy, which is like, I think it might be Turnigy.
It's just super cheap. Right, mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, you can get those 2200s for like $8, mm-hmm. right?
We use the 4-cell 3000. I think they're like $14.
Yeah, exactly.
Even the Nanotechs being a little bit more, like a lot of the AP guys that are flying per, you know. Mm-hmm. I'll use the quote symbol with, you know, in the air here with the AP guys that are flying professional work, you know, we'll just leave it at that, are flying Nanotechs because they are a fantastic battery, you know, to give them a shameless plug. I mean, they're doing the job and they are awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I've had Thunder Power batteries that cost triple that, as I said, put my quad in the lake, and the Nanotechs, I've been flying them for, you know, all season. And,
I think
if they're coming out with something new, that's,
I think the car guys are really going to like these because that's where you really use the burst. The electric cars and stuff. While we're on the subject of that, just a couple other little things. We talked in the last podcast about how these gas motors are coming out. You know,
that was the podcast that we lost.
Was it that one that we talked about?
I think so. I think we may have touched on it in the with David.
Right. I don't know if you know, Eric, they got EFI coming out on gas engines now.
I did not know that.
Right. Wow. And I have been corrected on Twitter. Apparently, OS years ago had fuel-injected gas engines, but they were junk and they didn't run right and they had problems and they disappeared. So this is not a first, but I think this is going to be a first to where they really work consistently.
Dialed in and really worked.
So anyway, we were talking about gas is really coming around. I actually just seen now that they have now they're on the cars right now, but they have the nitro motors that are converted over now to gas.
Really?
Yes, and they Losi's got one out right now that they're running on one of the trucks.
Having EFI on an airplane engine days of needle valves and adjusting in between flights, or you know, you adjust your valve on the ground and you get up there and the air changes and your plane leans out and shuts off.
Exactly.
And your dead stick
and we were talking about that in the last podcast and. Right now,
that could be a game changer.
Yeah, right now it's on a 62cc engine. Mm-hmm. But what they announced at the toy fair was that I seen Losi's got a car, and I think Proboat's got a 29cc out now that's got fuel injection. So the motors now are getting smaller and smaller and smaller with the fuel injection. And now what the cool thing they have is they have called a Ross system, which is remote start and shut off.
Right from the transmitter. Oh, yeah. See, now that's where technology is.
Yes.
Could get people back in. Like, because I left the night. I didn't really ever get into gas. Josh would fly those big gassers.
Right.
But
I
was into nitro. That's how I got into flying years back after my first glider or two. And I gave it up when the electrics and brushless came out because they're just easy and they're always the same. They're consistent.
Right.
But if you could get some consistency
and
some electric start and that sort of thing, I would get back into that in a heartbeat.
Right. And plus, you know, like we talked about before, these gas engines are getting smaller and smaller. Like they got a 20cc out now. They got a 15cc gas engine out now. And now Hobby King's got a couple, a company called NGH has got a 17cc and a 25cc. Coming out with CDI ignition. The cool thing is they got Walboro carburetors, so you can go anywhere and get parts for them or just buy a new one for $20 or whatever. Mm-hmm. And they're only like $170, you know. So, you know, you want a 40-size plane, you know, and want a little gas engine, I just think that's cool.
That's awesome.
You know. So that's some of the new things. Let's see what else we got. Okay, Hobbico. You guys did a review on the Fly Zone. What were those things where you changed the bodies on them?
Those air cores?
Air cores. Yeah. Yes, thank you. They got an FW190 coming out, and they got two zeros coming out in that lineup. Cool. So you'll have more to choose from. Hobbico's got a new Top Flight Zero coming out. That's a big scale airplane. Three new tactical radios. They got an 8-channel computer radio coming out. They got a 6 and a 4-channel coming out, and some new LiPos coming out.
So all this stuff you've named is all from Nuremberg's Toy Fair.
Correct.
Wow.
Yes. And again, there's...
We need to go there.
There's thousands of things. I basically just tried to dig in and get the major manufacturers to see what they got coming out. But there's everything and anything there.
Let's go see what Germany's like this time.
Yeah, I would love to go over that. I'm going to move on to Multiplex because I love Multiplex. Yeah. I own a lot of their stuff. And they actually have a lot of stuff coming out. Now, I have a Fun Cub. Love the thing. Actually, I'm on my second one. A friend of mine just happened to crash my first one. I had him on a buddy cord, and he was in a power-on dive, and before I could get it out, the wings folded up. So I got another one that I got to get built. But they got a new plane coming out called the, and I say this wrong every time, it's a Pilatus PC-6. And yeah, and watching the video, it kind of looks like a souped-up kind of Fun Cub. A little bit bigger motor, a little more powerful. It is
a full-scale plane. It's a,
right.
It's a kind of like a turboprop Cessna Caravan that's a tail dragger.
Right, right.
Wow.
Yeah.
And they're real, and they're super awesome. They use them a lot for skydiving. They use larger bush planes, turboprop. I actually saw, I think it was just a video, but it was a Pilatus, and it took up a bunch of skydivers and took them, it was an air show or something, took them way, way up. Dropped them out, and then as soon as the last guy jumped out of the plane, the Pilatus went straight into a nosedive, and he raced the parachuters back to the runway and beat them. Went straight into like a spiraling dive, spiraled down past the parachuters, landed on the runway and taxied, and the guys landed right next to the plane.
Wow.
It's really, really awesome plane, full scale. But these are foam, right? They're the same kind of material as the Fun Cub.
Yeah, they're all made out of that, what are they called? EPO. Ellipor foam. That's their own kind of EPP foam that, you know, they care, which I think personally, that's the best foam out of any manufacturer. I mean, you can't beat it. It doesn't like really dimple, you know, when you press on it, it's smooth. I mean, I think their foam's the best. So I was watching the video on it, and it's a lot faster than the Fun Cub, more maneuverable, but it has them big flaps that you can drop down like 90 degrees, and the thing would just slow down to a crawl. Hmm. So that thing looked pretty cool. They got a new dogfighter coming out, which we did a review on the regular dogfighter, but they got one coming out now called a SR. I'm guessing it's probably for special racing. I don't know. Yeah. But it's got just a big souped-up motor in it and a big ESC, and on the video they were doing like pylon racing with it and everything. Nice. But, man, that thing was so fast. I was like, I don't even know how you control that thing. They got another one coming out called the Shark. And I think this might kind of take over for the Easy Star down the road. It's kind of built on that platform, but completely redone. You know, it's got the motor in the back, brushless motor. The cool thing about it, it's got a lot of options. You can put ailerons on it if you want. You know, so you could buy this plane right off, learn how to fly, and then update it, put the aileron servos in it so you have an aileron trainer. But the cool thing is I think it comes out of the box. It's a belly lander, and it actually has a big plastic skid you can put on the bottom. But if you want to move up and do some other things, you can buy optional landing gear that just snaps right on.
Nice.
Then if you want to go a little farther, they got a float kit. Same thing, just kind of snaps right on. So you got almost three airplanes in one. So that I thought that was pretty cool. They got a Panda. I think it might have been out, but they were showcasing it, I believe, there. And it's another small sports sailplane they got coming out. But it looks pretty cool. Something, you know, you could just grab, throw in your car and take to the park.
Yeah.
Something of that nature. They have a couple new 7 and 8 channel computer radios coming out called Flash. They got a really new, cool little charger for the micro batteries. But the cool thing about it is it's adjustable. So, like, if you, you know, if you're doing 150 milliamp battery, you know, you can put it down to, you know, 1.5 or 0.5 or whatever. Or if you got a bigger battery, you can adjust it. So if you have three, you can put three different batteries on there of different milliamps and then adjust it.
Oh, that's cool.
So that was pretty cool. And I think that's it for multiplex, but they got, man, there's so much stuff coming out. Let's see what else we got. Oh, hey, I know something I almost forgot. Man, maybe you can pull that up for me, Alex. I ran into a new app, and I was going through it. I haven't bought it yet. It's not very much. It's called Windsock. And it's by Vivid Reflection. Have you seen this?
Mm-mm. No.
It's really cool. And the cool thing about it is you can put in there, it's got like Google Maps, and you can put on there your sights and where you fly at, and then it'll tell you exactly the weather and the wind. Like, it'll show you current, and then you can do, it'll show you hour by hour and shows you exactly what's going on at each different site.
What is it?
It's called Windsock, and but there's a couple different ones. This one's by it's by Vivid Reflection.
When we go out in the field, I fly in so many different areas. That'd be a good app to have on the iPhone.
Yeah, it is a cool app.
Yeah, here it is. Oh no, this is by somebody different. Which, speaking of apps, by the way, in the latest viewer response, Josh and I did. People asked if there was any good full scale simulator apps. For tablets or phone or whatever, and I said X-Plane, and I do love X-Plane, but everybody commented is like, X-Plane stinks, like you should use Infinite Flight. I downloaded Infinite Flight, and you are right, it is
awesome.
Yeah, it is super
super
cool.
That's full scale.
You use the accelerometers on your phone, or you fly like the tablet is the yoke, and it's a lot of fun, and the graphics are way better, and the maps are bigger, and it's a lot of fun.
I got to get that.
So thanks for the recommendation.
Well, guys, that's about all I got. You got anything else you wanted to share? Anything, Eric?
Yeah, I'm going to have to do a shameless plug.
Yeah, go for it.
My friends were like, if you guys don't plug us, they want to mention really bad. One of the coolest things that I've got to experience, I think, besides, I've got to be at all these flight test shoots since, clear back in the beginning. I've got to meet all you guys and all that. But there's such a cool community. And, I know that that's, something that flight test has always been about, is building the hobby and advancing and, having community with people and bringing a lot of new people into the hobby. The few guys that I talk to on a regular basis are all over the world and all over the country. And we talk literally from the time we get up in the morning till the time we go to bed at night. And so Dan and Pat and Brian, and then Andre and Fred. Andre and Fred are a little bit more well known. Andre's Color X. You guys all know him.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
And Fred Provost, Flying Monkey.
Yeah, yeah.
But Dan and Pat and Brian are, we have like this whole chat that all of us get together on, and like from 2 o'clock in the morning to whenever, we're putting build pictures and, constantly talking about all these different things. And it's been really engaging. In fact, I got to go out on one of my discovery shoots and I got to have wings with Pat.
No kidding.
So I got to meet some of these guys and I'm Skyping to South America with Andre all the time. And so it's been really a neat community. And so, I'm designing new things and they're designing new things and we're sharing them. And it's like real time. It's like we don't have the miles between us. It doesn't feel that way. So, we talk on the phone and so on and so forth. So, a shout out to those guys, but just the bigger thing is that just the community that gets built with what we're all doing here. It's just awesome to see that continue to grow and to just keep.
Hopefully they're listening to the podcast.
Oh yeah, they are. They said that you better mention us. We listen to every one of them.
Oh, that's funny. That's great.
Shout out to you guys. It's been awesome getting to know you guys, and I can't wait to see what the future brings for everyone. So.
Good. All right, guys. Well, we're going to pretty much wrap this up. Again, we just really appreciate you guys listening. We're continuing to work on some stuff. If you have any questions, comments, topics, anything,
hit suggestions.
Suggestions, anything at all, hit me up on Twitter at FT After Hours. You can email me at chris@flighttest.com. Hey, one little thing, Alex, I wanted to mention. I got a ton of emails about voicemails. As of right now, we haven't been playing any voicemails on After Hours, but what you can do, if you go on the...
We should.
Yeah, which we should. If we get some, you know. But if you go on flighttest.com, click on the podcast, and go click on one of the regular podcast episodes, scroll down probably about halfway, there should be a little link there to leave a voicemail, and you just click it. And if you click on that and you want to leave a message, just make sure that you let them know that it's for a Flight Test After Hours, and you can leave us a message.
That's a good idea.
And we'll go from there. If we get if we start getting a lot, then I have no problem. We can play them and go
think
from
that'd
there.
Be great.
So, and that's about it, guys. So I hope you enjoy it, and keep on listening, and we'll talk to you next time.
Thanks, guys.
Cheers.